From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on September 23rd, when the Rochester Police Accountability Board released reports on 31 completed investigations into allegations of police misconduct. As reported by WXXI's Gino Finelli, the PAB sustained allegations of misconduct in 23 of the 31 reports, describing misuse of body-worn cameras, misuse of force, racial bias, and more. I'll read more now from Gino's story. Quote, "The most common finding of police misconduct was misuse of body-worn cameras, appearing in 9 of the reports. Other reports found misuse of force, racial bias, discourteous language, and falsifying reports. The recommended punishments range from notes of apology to, in 4 cases, termination. The PAB does not have the authority to discipline RPD officers. Only the police chief can do that. While Chief David Smith has taken action based on some of the PAB's reports, he has yet to follow the exact recommendations made by the board, according to the PAB." End quote. If you have followed the years-long drama of the Rochester Police Accountability Board, you know how significant this moment is. When the PAB was approved by Rochester voters, the original leaders thought they would have disciplinary power over police. The courts have struck down that authority. And yet the PAB leadership has maintained that they can provide a vital public service. They can conduct investigations. They can publicly release their findings. They contend that even without disciplinary power, their findings can illuminate important events and issues and apply pressure on the Rochester Police Department to discipline their officers when appropriate. But it turns out the city of Rochester's own legal team advised the PAB not to release these reports. We asked the Evans administration to join us today. They declined but emphasized their statement on the matter, which reads in part, quote, "The city's legal position is that the Police Accountability Board, per its charter, does not have the authority to publish internal investigative reports, and that publication of such reports, redacted or otherwise, violates local law, the automatic stay of the Fourth Department's decision in the NYCLU matter, and the city's own code of ethics. The public release of allegations of wrongdoing that may be or have already been determined to be inaccurate is dangerous. Any attributions of an employee's name to a report, whether that attribution is correct or incorrect, can have lasting impacts on that employee's personal and professional lives." End quote. The PAB knew of the Evans administration's objections and released their reports anyway. And today we discussed that decision and what they say their investigations have turned up and why they want the public to know this. My guests this hour include the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board, Leslie Meyer Small, is back with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is deputy executive director of the PAB, Ben Whitwer. Thank you for being here, Ben.
Absolutely.
Larry Knox is chair of the Police Accountability Board. Larry, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Gino Finelli is investigations and city hall reporter for WXXI News. Thank you for being here, Gino.
Happy to be here.
The Locust Club, the Rochester Police Locust Club, was invited to join us as well. And I want to read a note. They declined to join us, but their president, Jeffrey Wyatter, sends this note. Quote, "Thank you for the invitation to be on the show, but unfortunately I will have to decline at this time. We currently have ongoing legal and union-related litigation between the Locust Club and the PAB, and we do not want to jeopardize anything related to this topic on behalf of our members. In the future, we would be happy to be part of the show. Thank you again." And that's from the Locust Club. The city of Rochester sent I read part of their statement, really the meat of it there, but they have essentially deferred to their legal department, which believes that the PAB is really misstepping here. So let me start with this. Gino Finelli, when the reports came out here, you've been reporting on this for years now. I guess I was not surprised. We've talked to the PAB for years. The intention I always heard was, well, if we don't have disciplinary power, okay, we're still going to investigate and release the reports. I think maybe I was not fully up to date on the controversy here. I did not know it was going to be contested by City Hall. Was that a surprise to you?
Not particularly a surprise. I think that there was, if we look at like the history of information sharing and some of the other relationships that have developed between the PAB and the city, there has been this kind of adversarial relationship that for one, I don't think needs to exist. I want to be clear on that. I think particularly in this scenario, this was a legal opinion that was created by the Corporation Counsel, and he does use some legal arguments within it, but this wasn't like there was a court stay to prevent them from doing it. It wasn't like there was immediate legal action that was going to be taken if the PAB went forward with releasing the report. This was just kind of like, hey, don't do it kind of thing. So, no, I'm not surprised that there's been this kind of friction there. But, you know, I think at the top, one of the things I would say is having covered this for, wow, like 6 years now of the PAB's development, philosophically, this is what a major thing that they're supposed to do is do these reports, whether or not they have the disciplinary power, and release them to the public. And for people that might be either on the side of the PAB or opposed to the idea of it, I would encourage them to think of it in the way that I think of it, as these are public servants, police officers, and they are answerable to the public. And any records that exist within that, any disciplinary findings that are made, any disciplinary proceedings that happen that might not come to a finding, I think the public has a right to know about them, just as they would in any other agency that has any kind of issues within it. That need for transparency is readily apparent, and this does not exist in all states. New York is kind of unique in the sense of how much they limit access to these kinds of documents.
Gino, once in a while I ask you, you know, what are the next questions that are unanswered? Here's one for me that I would ask city council. Or, I mean, there's division on Rochester City Council, we know that. But I would ask really any city leadership, whether it is city attorney Patrick Beeth or the mayor or city council, what I would ask is this. It is nothing new that the PAB does not have disciplinary power. We've known that. Now, they've been trying through court challenges to change that, but there's been no indication that that's going to change. And yet, the city of Rochester has chosen to continue to fund the PAB. If the purpose is not to release these reports, then to what end are we funding this? You're funding it. Why are you funding a PAB that you know is investigating? And the expectation is for them to investigate and then do what with that? Sit on it? I don't really fully understand what the intention was to continue funding if you didn't want them releasing reports.
That's under the assumption they intend on continuing funding.
Well, that's fair. Maybe they don't.
And I struggle with this because I think, as everyone in this room is well aware, I mean, a lot of writing I've done has been critical of how the PAB has operated, particularly under previous leadership. But I don't think it can be understated that there have been impediments put in place every step along the way to prevent them from doing the work that they were tasked by voters and the charter to do. This wasn't just a group of activists that got together and said, we're going to do this, as a lot of people like to characterize that. This was voted upon by over 3/4 of a referendum vote in 2019. It was given these powers. It had some of those powers stripped away. But it would be very, very mischaracterizing to act as if the PAB has not been making the effort to do the work that it was tasked with doing. It has been. And it has been brick wall after brick wall. And now we're kind of at the point where, like, if you can't even release a redacted report on an investigation you do into misconduct, and that's the last brick wall. I mean, what else are you supposed to do? So, it's a good question. Why even continue funding it if the city doesn't want to do any of the things it was tasked with doing?
Leslie Meyer-Small, executive director of the Rochester PAB. My understanding was it was no surprise to your team that the city did not want you to release these reports in September. Is that correct?
I need to actually start by saying it was no surprise to the Corporation Council, City Council. We were in meetings for months. The few months that I have been here, we've had these conversations. We talked about what we endeavored to do. And had, we thought, really robust conversations that really didn't have much opposition, Patrick. Certainly, Patrick, you know, was saying, I really don't want you to release them. But it really felt, it was until the last minute that we received that formal letter from Patrick that outlined, and that was
the city attorney. Yeah.
Right. And that was in response to, we said, we have internal counsel, which is Ben, but we also have T. Andrew Brown, who's very well respected. He provided a really extensive legal brief.
Former city attorney under the Warren administration.
Yes. T. Andrew Brown, former president of the New York State Bar Association, former vice chancellor. He gave us a really extensive brief that went really point by point. So it really backed up what our general counsel, Ben, was saying. And in consultation with our board, we felt really comfortable. So this is not a matter that I appreciate your question, But we were very clear. The board was very clear that we were moving forward in this direction.
And let me make sure I'm characterizing this correctly.
Sure.
Then, I think what you're saying is that as the weeks leading up to the release of these reports went on, you knew that City Attorney Patrick Beith was saying, "We prefer you don't."
Correct.
But it was by no means as firm as it was from him until the last second. That it was kind of a, did you feel almost blindsided by the vehemence in that?
I felt it was very strong, but I knew that he, you know, we had the understanding that he was saying, you know, I'd really rather you not, don't, you know, we don't want you to report. But it was that Friday memo, right, that was much more direct and firm.
Part of what he is saying in the memo, let me read it again, because then I will tell you how that reads to a non-lawyer like me, and mm-hmm. I want to hear the whole team's response here. But what the city says in part is this, quote, "The city's legal position is that the Police Accountability Board, per its charter, does not have the authority to publish internal investigative reports," end quote, and then goes on to say, "The public release of allegations of wrongdoing that may be or already have been determined to be inaccurate is dangerous," end quote. So what they're saying is to the public, you're going to see these 31 cases reviewed by the PAB, but we think some of their findings are already inaccurate. You shouldn't put that out there. Is that, Ben, you're shaking your head, but I mean, that's how it sounds to me, like they are tarnishing the quality of the reports. Is that how does it read to you?
So, Evan, what I think is so important, and this is what we are encouraging individuals to do, and Ben will co-sign this, go on the website and read the reports, right? Read the quality. And yes. What we've been accused of, or what has been said, is that, you know, your investigators are not qualified. They don't have the background and experience. Before our staff came to the Police Accountability Board, they were investigators of domestic violence and other issues, right? And so they brought that expertise and that training, but then they receive additional training. We've mentioned this before. We're a part of the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, who actually we received an endorsement of the board received a letter saying this is exactly what a civilian oversight board should be doing, and it's a part of best practice and endorsed by the National Association. But our staff are trained by NACOL. We bring in other experts who are either current or previous law enforcement. So to say it's not high quality, I think you just need to read them and then just see.
Is there anything in your reporting, per what the city says there, that you know to be inaccurate?
No.
Okay. Ben, how would you characterize the interactions with the city attorney and City Hall on this?
Well, I think to understand what's meant by the portion that you're reading, we have to understand the state of the law. The city's position around this is identical to the police union's position, the Locust Club's position. It's a position that says that even though the state of New York has made police misconduct records public, that actually there should be greater privacy protections and that certain types of police misconduct allegations should not be public, specifically unsubstantiated allegations. So firstly, this is a position that's been repudiated by the courts. The city of Rochester was sued by the NYCLU around its failure to provide police disciplinary records, which are legally public by law, and the Fourth Department, the appellate court, held that they did have to provide those things, that the city and the police union's interpretation of the law is inaccurate. Now, they've appealed that to the Court of Appeals, but it is the state of the law right now that police misconduct records are public, even unsubstantiated police misconduct records. And I think Gino talked earlier a little bit about the rationale behind that. They're public servants. It's a matter of sort of public importance. So that's number one. The second thing that needs to be emphasized is that the PAB is a valid and legal arbiter over whether Rochester police officers have committed misconduct. And that is true because of the amendment to the city charter that was enacted in 2019. It is the law of the city of Rochester that the Police Accountability Board exists to investigate allegations of misconduct, that after the investigation is concluded, it goes to our board, who vote on whether or not to adopt the recommendations. And then that determines whether or not misconduct was committed and a recommended discipline. So that's what the law is. So to say that police misconduct PAB reports are somehow unverified or unsubstantiated. What is meant by that by the city is that the police chief has not signed off on them, that the police chief has not decided that he agrees with them, that discipline has not been imposed as a result of them. But that is different than saying that they're not substantiated or unverified. As Dr. Myers-Small said, we stand by our investigations to the point that we put them out to the public so that everyone could see them, so that people don't have to ask, what does the PAB investigation look like? Well, now they know. They know all the evidence we consider. They know the rationale that was put into place for each rule and order of the police department that they're bound to follow, you know, for each conclusion, and they know what the board's final word was. So we're being completely transparent about this. We'll let people decide for themselves, you know, whether or not they think the reports are good. I'm certainly very proud of the work that our staff do, but it is the law that the PAB determines whether or not Rochester police officers have or have not committed misconduct. And to say that they're, I think, unsubstantiated or unfounded in some way is just like not an accurate statement of the law.
I'm going to get Larry's take in just a second. Let me just follow up on a couple points here, Ben. There was one word, again, to my non-lawyerly mind that stood out in the city's statement. They called your reports internal reports that should not be released. And the implication to a non-lawyer is, well, these are sort of like kind of in process, not done. They're just internal. They're just kicking around. And I don't know if that was an intentional word. That's how it hit my ears. But the reports are complete, right? That's why they're released. Is that correct?
Correct, Evan. And you've identified this crucial rhetorical device that's being used in the statement, right?
I'm observing. I'm not alleging they're intending to use a rhetorical device.
Well, I think it's a really important observation because the language suggests something that is not actually meant. What's actually meant legally is that because the police chief hasn't adopted the findings and issued discipline, they don't consider them to be substantiated. But they are absolutely complete. They represent review by trained investigators who have investigative experience in, you know, fraud, misconduct allegations, workplace misconduct allegations, financial crimes, all different types of things. So we have trained investigators that work on them. I review every report that goes out. Dr. Myers-Smaller, the executive director, reviews every report, and our board reviews every report. So they are absolutely complete, thorough, and finished. And I think that I think the statement suggests otherwise, and the statement is inaccurate.
Okay. How about, Ben, a situation where they say to you, look, do your work, complete your reports, keep that in-house, we'll see what the chief says, and when the chief agrees, then we can release to the public the one that you guys are in agreement on.
I mean, I think a couple of things there. I think in terms of, you know, negotiating more of a process where the PAB is more cooperative with the law department and RPD around what is released, I think we welcome that. And that's something that we've sought certainly in the time that I've been in here. It's something that, you know, that requires them to engage with us. And instead of kind of taking the hard line that they're currently taking, you know, what we would much prefer is a sort of approach where we could work more cooperatively. And I think that now that, you know, reports being publicized is the norm. I should mention, as it is in New York City, as it is in the city of Albany, Chicago, Oakland, as it is, you know, kind of across the state and country, where most similarly situated boards do post their reports, we can definitely work cooperatively on how to do that. But in terms of your point about why aren't these just internal reports that don't go out to the public, the answer is the city charter, which says at the very beginning that transparency is a pillar of the PAB's work. In order for the PAB to exist legally, we have to be engaging with the public around our findings. We can't just be a private advisory board to the police chief. That was the status quo before the PAB existed.
If there was a situation, Dr. Myers-Small, where the city is asking you only to release your reports if the chief of police signs on to your recommendations, and you do not release any other reports that the chief of police has disagreement on, would that be giving effective veto power to the police department over the work that you're doing?
It feels like it, yes. And I think for me, I would want to have a really rich and deep conversation with the chief around what his process is to understand that. I don't know how he adjudicates these, how he reviews them, what goes into it. So to answer that fully and say, yes, I'd be okay with that, or the agency would be okay with that, I would really need to have a good understanding of what that looked like.
Okay.
And what that process was.
And the chief, do we know how many of the 31 that the chief has essentially said, I think the PAB is on the money, we're going to do this? Has that happened?
That has not happened. What the chief will do is he'll acknowledge receipt of our reports, and then if he does end up disciplining, he'll let us know the form the discipline took. So we have, I think, 7 or 8 instances where we know ultimately what RPD did to address an allegation of misconduct that we sustained, and then the other instances we don't know.
So of the 31, how many of the RPD's reactions match what you want?
None. In some cases, they don't disagree with the investigative findings. In some, they agree, but discipline differently.
But none have matched? So you recommended 4 officers be dismissed, right? How many have been dismissed?
None. I mean, one of the cases I think was, you know, reported on where it went to arbitration and the chief worked something out post-arbitration, but none of the 4 that we recommended termination was the officer terminated.
And I'm going to try to close my brain's loops on these questions. And in a second, Gino's going to bail me out with whatever I'm not thinking of here. But I want to say again, we've invited the PAB to be here. We invited City Hall, the city attorney, or, you know, the mayor or any representative to be here. They sent us the statement, essentially the same statement they sent to Gino and other reporters. The Rochester Police Locust Club is invited to be here. They declined, saying that, you know, there's kind of ongoing legal questions, and they're going to decline to be part of today's conversation. But I asked you the last time you were here, Dr. Meyer-Small, what the relationship is like with Chief Smith and the RPD. What has it been like since these reports came out? Have you had conversations with the chief?
So we had one-on-one meetings, and I think what makes this, certainly the relationship has been strained. It's the novelty and I think the newness of the reports. We just haven't done that before. But having a relationship, as I shared before, Evan, is really critical. A positive, productive one that maybe we'll agree to disagree. And so I think we just need some time for people to get accustomed to these. And I truly believe that I'll be back in, you know, having these one-on-one meetings with the chief. But certainly there, it's tense.
Okay. Fair enough. And let me turn to Larry Knox, who is Larry's official title with the Accountability Board is chair of the board here. And so obviously you've read everything they've done. Yep. You've seen how the city has characterized the work as potentially inaccurate or not on good legal standing to be released. How do you feel about the quality of the reports?
I think it's great work. I mean, I think our staff is doing a really difficult job underneath difficult circumstances, and they've produced a really good product. Go online and look at them if you're not sure, if you had a chance, or you're just hearing about them and not seeing them yourself. The work is up there. I do want to say it's not just the work of the investigations. We have a lot of good policy work that has happened and continue to happen, too. That's up on our website, too. So there's policy recommendations, but that I also want people to see that is also amazing work. But when it comes to the reports, they're detailed. These aren't 2-week investigations. It's a lot of thought that goes into it. And when we have the review panels as a board, there's a lot of conversation, a lot of back and forth over going through those recommendations. And we don't always agree with the staff. Most of the time, you know, there is agreement, but sometimes the board members individually or as a whole, you know, have different ideas or thoughts on that. So there is a great back and forth that happens. But it's really good quality work that I think people were expecting and wanted to see. When this was passed in 2019. And I do also want to say, when we talk about government and city, you know, there is the administration, there is corporation council, and there is city council. And they're all kind of different layers of our city government. And corporation council is supposed to advise the city council and also advise the mayor and also advise the RPD and also advise us. And that's a heavy lift. And there's probably more you could say about, you know, having all those people that office is supposed to advise. But we're pretty clear, you know, from our general counsel, from our outside counsel, from what the public voted on, and from what a majority of city council members want. I will say the majority of council members have expressed support for us putting these reports up. There may be a difference of what they've heard from corporation counsel about the timing of that, but there isn't any, you know, indication, and they've been in a lot of these meetings or been advised of the meetings if they're not in them, of our intentions to do this and all the other work, and they've been supportive. The timing, maybe there is some disagreement on because of what Corporation Council has said and what they've listened to in regards to that. But the actual work going up, along with the other policy work that is going on, you know, Council has been supportive of, and I'm proud of the work that our staff has done with that.
Before I ask Larry the next question, Gino, tell me if I'm wrong here. I want to represent the different parties in this accurately. And City Attorney Patrick Beith does advise council, the mayor, I guess the PAB. So it does a lot of work there. But in my view, based on what the statements have said, I've been describing this as this is the Evans administration's position on this. I mean, I think Patrick Beith serves at the discretion of the mayor. And if Mayor Evans feels differently than the city attorney, I'm yet to hear it on this matter.
That I would say that's correct, yes.
Okay. So it's fair to say that for everything we understand,
yeah,
this is the...
Patrick Beith, as the corporation counsel,
yeah,
works directly for the mayor's office. So, but okay, he also, since city council doesn't have any actual legal representation right now, he often does provide legal guidance to city council. The PAB is a little bit different in that it seeks outside legal counsel, and Ben is also general counsel, I believe. So that's a kind of a different arrangement for them. But at the end of the day, he's the top lawyer. So
okay, fair enough. And so, you know, Larry, about a year ago, maybe, when we had a conversation with maybe when was the first conversation with you, Ben?
March, probably.
March might have been. And then it was close to a year ago that we had talked to some of the people who do the investigative work for PAB and really started to talk more about process. And they told us about a year ago, there will be reports coming. And eventually, it is likely that there will be some recommendations of discipline. We don't know how that will go over with RPD. We don't know how that will go over with the mayor, but we're going to see. And so none of that's a surprise that this has now happened. We're 5 years in. Gina keeps saying it's 2019. I keep forgetting. It was 2019 that this passed. We're 5 years in.
Yeah.
So nobody should be surprised that you've done this.
Yeah.
But I think what your colleagues have said is that effectively, the Evans administration's position on this has no distance between the Locust Club's position. It's the same. It's you should not be, probably shouldn't be investigating, shouldn't be releasing, and you don't have disciplinary power. Are you surprised that there's no distance there?
I think there's a grayness there. I will say that the appointees to the board, four of them are city council appointees, one's a mayoral appointee, and four appointed by the Police Accountability Board Alliance. So the majority of this board is appointed by city government. And it's not the majority of the board. The board is unanimous, every appointee, that this is something that should happen, is expected to happen. And these are folks that also have constant conversations with the people that have appointed them to the board or have their, you know, or the seat, even if it's not the exact person in that seat anymore, for city council that appoint them to the board. The mayor's appointee to the board, you know, Bill Clark, is former head of the Urban League, is 100% on board with this. He's had conversations with the mayor, which are their conversations about this. So I think it's a continuing conversation. There's a learning curve that everybody's having with this. And when you're doing a big change, especially this kind of change in our community, which is a historic change, it's not, I wish it would go smoothly, but it wouldn't. And when you're in city government, there's a, you know, sometimes a worry about what does this mean? And maybe we should slow down, or we got to look at every angle, or let's see what the lawyer says. Which is understandable, but, you know, there's a clarity that we have. And after having, you know, 2 years of conversations of working towards this point and getting the agency to a strong enough point to be able to do this also, because, you know, obviously we had our growing pains also. But there wasn't a lack of clarity from the board, from the staff, and I think from majority of council, this is something that needed to happen. There is some disagreement over the timing of it because of what the corporation council has said. But we're pretty clear this is what the community wanted and expected, and we support that.
After we take our only break of the hour, I'm going to lean on my colleague Gino Finelli a bit as we talk a little bit about what we do know about the specific cases. So 31 cases investigated by the Rochester Police Accountability Board that have reports that are now out. Those are not the only 31 cases they've investigated. Turns out there have been several hundred, I think. And, you know, the majority, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, don't result in any finding of recommended discipline. So these 31 cases are not indicative of the average case that comes in, but they are a great opportunity to actually read from them. If you have strong opinions about the PAB, you have the opportunity right now to actually read the work. If you are upset about what they've done, or if you applaud what they've done, but you haven't read the work, I think you're missing a chance to be better informed. So we should all be better informed. And we'll link in our show notes to Gino's reporting, to the PAB's reports, and we all ought to be as best informed as we can, especially now with the transparency that has come with this kind of reporting. But we are going to talk a little bit about what we do know about some of the specific cases and where this might go next. Gino Finelli, my colleague from WXXI, who for my money has done the best reporting on this for years now, is with us. And Larry Knox, chair of the Police Accountability Board. Leslie Meyer-Small, Dr. Meyer-Small, is the executive director of the Rochester PAB, and Ben Whitwer is the deputy executive director. We are right back with them next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we're joined by two more candidates running for state office this election season. In the first half hour, we talk with Marcus C. Williams, candidate for Assembly District No. 137. In our second half hour, Orlando Rivera joins us, candidate in District 136. In our second hour, have you been to the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York? We talk with Executive Director Journey Gunderson about the center's role in comedy culture. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Hey, during our brief break, my colleague Gino Finelli was pointing out that, at least to your knowledge, Gino, well, let me back up and say, the Locust Club, essentially the Police Union of Rochester, declined an invitation to be on this program today. The Locust Club has been deeply critical of the PAB since its inception and continues to be critical with the release of these reports. And Jeffrey Wyatter, the president of the Locust Club, says, thank you for the invitation to be on the show. I have to decline at this time. We currently have ongoing legal and union-related litigation between the Locust Club and the PAB, and we don't want to jeopardize anything related to this topic. You familiar with any of that?
No. As far as I know, any litigation between the PAB and the Locust Club has been settled for well over a year. I am not aware of any litigation that is going on between the Locust Club and the PAB. I do not know what he's talking about.
Okay, Ben, as deputy executive director, I mean, is he right?
I'm not. There's no.
Grab that mic. Get a little closer there.
I'm not aware of any litigation that the Locust Club has filed against the PAB. I can't say what's going on between them and the city law department, but I'm not even
is
sure what the subject
is. Possible they are preparing litigation
it's
against you?
It's possible. I don't know what the claim would be. The Locust Club is well aware that the publishing of these reports is legal, that it's done in other, you know, cities in New York State, that it's the law. It's a law they disagree with. You have to remember the Locust Club exists to protect its members, including members who've been accused of police misconduct. So their priorities are very distinct from the priorities of the PAB, which are around police accountability. But it is the law that this information is public, and I'm not aware of any legal action they've taken around that issue.
And you're saying that in other communities that are not just Rochester, boards like yours release reports like you have done?
Yes. New York City, Albany.
You haven't broken a brand new precedent here?
Not at all.
Okay. Okay.
We're just joining the best practices of similar agencies around the state and country.
I do have one more question before I want to ask Gino and our panel to take us through some of what we are finding specifically in these investigations. But the general criticism that either comes from the Locust Club, sometimes it comes from listeners of this program, sometimes it comes from community members who are critical of the PAB, it sounds like this. You can investigate all you want, but you don't have retired police officers. You don't have people with law enforcement experience. And as a result, number one, you don't have the expertise to do it. And number two, it feels stacked against the police. Larry Knox, as the chair of the PAB, having read these reports, what do you make of that criticism?
Of course, I support the reports, but I would encourage people to read them themselves. I mean, that's just me saying that, but I think if you read the reports and if you read the policy work, you'll see there is an anti-police bias there.
There is not, you're saying?
Yeah, there is not. The board and the staff are really clear on there was a lot of controversy when this was created. So the worst thing that could have happened is us release reports that weren't well done. For us to do policy reports and recommendations that weren't well done, that didn't have backing material, didn't have data. Didn't have recommendations that were, that were possible. They didn't have engagement with the community. All those are things that have happened through the work of the agency, especially over the last couple of years. And the work product, I mean, I'm saying it as board chair, so of course I'm going to affirm it, but I would encourage people to read it themselves.
Let me ask the executive director, are you lacking something by not having police experience as part of your board, your investigations teams?
I don't think so. We've just reiterated the importance of hiring staff that are well-versed in being able to conduct these investigations, Evan, and then continuing annual training. And as I started at the top of the show, our national association says that this represents best practice. They are aware of our work. They have followed us from inception up to today, and they are very supportive of us making this move, and it does reflect best practices in civilian oversight.
Okay, and Ben, to reiterate for people who might have missed it, the 31 reports does not represent the whole of the work here. There have been, hundreds of different, I'm going to use the wrong legal term, claims, allegations brought to the board? Is
yes,
that right?
We investigate every allegation that's brought to us. So in many instances, you know, the investigation, there may turn out to be nothing there, or it may be that we don't get enough information to investigate. I mean, one of the issues that we have is that we don't always get access to the documents that we're entitled to under the charter from the police department and from other agencies. And if we don't have material to investigate, then we can't investigate. And obviously, we won't make a conclusion. But the reports represent the investigations. We're able to actually get everything that we would need to make the determination that we're legally entrusted with making, and then, you know, finish our process. And I will say to the question about law enforcement involvement, the entire reason the PAB was created and overwhelmingly adopted by the voters is because of a recognition that it didn't make sense to have the police investigate the police because of concerns about bias with police disciplinary practices that are internally done. It's hard to investigate misconduct by, you know, your friend who works in the next office over. And so the whole point of having a civilian review board and doing investigations in this way is to remove bias and to have neutrality, and that's why, you know, we're trained civilian investigators. But also to your point, it's not like every single investigation that comes across our desk results in a sustained finding and a disciplinary recommendation. That's actually the vast minority of the situation. The
vast majority do not have sustained finding. So, Gino Finelli, on these 31 reports that we've seen now, with four different recommendations of dismissing an officer, what stands out to you first and foremost?
Well, I mean, I think that having read through the vast majority of the reports, you do see trends. I think the body-worn camera stuff is what I, you know, pointed out in the story that this is a consistent thing that we've seen over the years where you ask for body-worn camera footage and it doesn't exist. This is clearly a pattern of an issue that has existed for a long time in the department. But as far as the terminations go, one of those recommended was Charles Otempio, who was the officer, the investigator who handcuffed an EMT and was later, actually very recently in the last couple of weeks, forced to retire or plan to retire. It's one of those things where you have an event that's that public and that well documented, and I think any reasonable person would look at that and say, "Well, there should be some kind of investigation from someone to determine some kind of discipline." It doesn't really seem like any discipline with really being asked to retire is not really a discipline. Another one of the cases that they've recommended termination was a officer that we have reported on pretty regularly. His name is Mitchell Leach. And again, these reports are redacted. We're able to track down who these officers are just basically by knowing the cases very well or just digging a little bit of research. But this is an officer that has sustained four federal lawsuits against him in the past 3 years. One has since been dismissed. Three of the four were for use of force. And as far as I know, no discipline has actually been given by the department itself. So what I'm seeing in these reports, especially with the more serious claims of misconduct that are contained within the PAB reports, is they're making recommendations on very, very high levels of discipline, oftentimes for officers that really are not getting any discipline, even in very well-documented cases. And is there a common ground between the department and the recommendation? Maybe. But it's also the question of, well, are these cases just simply being overlooked? In Lotempio's case, no. I mean, this was going on for years and the union played a large role in the final determination there. But it raises a question of what is contained within the personnel files and the disciplinary files that the department has that we are told even though the law changed when 50A was repealed in 2020, and even though the court had ruled in favor of the NYCLU, that the city and the union and the department keeps telling us, nope, you're not allowed to know about it. What is contained within those? So the best glimpse that we have of that right now are those PAB reports, redacted as they are, without the ability to actually compel discipline as they are. They still give a glimpse of what is happening behind the scenes in these investigations. And for the question of why should people care about that? Well, these are, one, your tax dollars, and two, your civil rights. The police are the only government agency that works directly in dealing with people's civil rights on a day-to-day basis. They can take your freedom away. They can act upon you in ways that no other government agency can. And I think the bare minimum, just my personal belief, and I believe this for most parts of government, but the bare minimum is that we at least get to know what they're doing. That's it. Like, that seems so simple, and we should all agree on it.
Well, I want to just echo one part of that here. I have a bias in favor of transparency. If you want to suppress information, I would like you to have a really good reason. And one of my frustrations this hour is not having the city's attorney or the mayor or representative or anybody else who supports this idea that the PAB should not at least be publicizing reports. I always want to know why, if you want to suppress information, you know, why you'd like it suppressed.
There's usually one good reason, and it's because there's information they don't want us to see.
Now, part of the claim, according to City Hall, and again, this is City Attorney Patrick Beith, is that unsubstantiated allegations can be damaging to someone's reputation and affect their life in a negative way. And can I just, I know Larry wants to jump in on a few of these points. Let me just ask Leslie and Ben about that. Are you concerned, Dr. Meyer-Small, about unsubstantiated reports and the publication here and the city attorney's concern about damaging reputations?
Again, we have to go back to the fact that they are public entities and they're public figures. And so we, although not required to, we do redact because we want to be respectful, certainly, and to we want the public to understand what has happened. We want the public to understand our process and the thoroughness of which we approach this. But we don't reveal names of the officer or officers who are involved, and we don't reveal the names of those who reported it.
Okay.
Ben? And part of the reasoning behind putting up reports where we didn't sustain a finding of misconduct is because we do not always sustain them, is to show the public what it looks like when an allegation actually, you know, this is something that the police are allowed to do. And it informs the public about police guidelines that would be helpful for them to be aware of.
So there's a purpose in releasing those too.
There is. And one of the other things it shows sometimes, you know, sometimes we exonerate officers, which means they did nothing wrong. Sometimes we sustain findings. Sometimes we say it's not sustained. We can't really conclusively say whether misconduct occurred. And sometimes the reason for that is we might not have gotten body cam footage, for instance. So Gino talked about the trend of officers not following the body cam policy. One of the consequences that has is we don't always have evidence that ought to exist that might be relevant to other allegations of misconduct. And so sometimes that's what our report will say. It'll say, look, this person complained about this. There was no body cam, so we couldn't determine, you know, externally what happened. And that's still of public concern and import, even though it doesn't reflect a finding that officer misconduct occurred.
Larry, you want to weigh in on some of this?
Yeah, two things. One, Ben took some of what I was going to say, so thank you, Ben. But I will add for end of one thing. I mean, we've had cases, and then obviously I don't know every case because I don't sit on everyone, where the allegation that the public complained about was not sustained, but we sustained on body camera, which the public wouldn't have known that that wasn't on. So mm-hmm. that kind of, again, with that accountability and openness of why we need to put those reports out. Also, oftentimes we get reports in where somebody has made a complaint, and they have not made the complaint to police. They didn't go to Internal Affairs or PSS. So the first time that the chief is hearing about it is when we hear about it, and we're sharing that. We always do share that with them as soon as we get an investigation in. Hey, chief, here's what we're looking at, and they're supposed to do the same with us. So oftentimes, you know, folks did not feel comfortable going to the RPD with a complaint. They can't come to us with it, and then we'll be fully, as much as we can, investigate it. And that's a really important factor, too, because oftentimes there's complaints that would not have existed without us being here, because those people were not going to go to the RPD with a complaint. The RPD would not have known about the chief would not have known about it unless we had brought it to them.
And that goes to your question about involving law enforcement in the PEB, Evan. Is we know anecdotally that there are folks who aren't comfortable reporting police misconduct to police officials, and that's why the PEB exists as a valuable alternative.
I just wanted to add, too, there's been a lot of conversation about body-worn camera footage. And just recently, this speaks to our training. We had a great all-staff training last month on this and learning about the history of body-worn camera footage, what your rights are as a citizen, and just some other details around that. And so when you think about when we make these reports, people can see that if it's a body cam footage. We also are putting together just a little brief to help individual citizens to understand what are my rights relative to body-worn camera footage and how do I proceed in a particular way or what can I ask of an officer? And I think that's really powerful, especially in these instances, right?
Well, most of us can remember when body-worn cameras was initially an idea that was heavily debated. And one of the claims is it's not just about a gotcha against the police. It's about showing that sometimes if you have an allegation against an officer and a camera can show that that allegation is not sustainable.
Correct.
That is helpful to the police.
We've had use of force allegations that we've watched the body cam footage after the staff have not affirmed them because we see that what the person that made the complaint thought was happened or had happened wasn't what happened because of the body cam footage.
But good for people to know what the rights are.
Correct.
And what the expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Ben, back to Gino's point on you've got a situation with an officer, highly profiled incident, and your recommendation is termination for the officer. If the union, if the RPD says, look, he retired, it's over. Like, he had his retirement. He's not on the force anymore. Let's move on. You say what?
I think what's interesting about that story is you can see the huge impact that the collective bargaining agreement between the police union and the city has on officer discipline, because that's an example of a time where RPD apparently did intend to terminate an officer, but because of the prevailed in arbitration, they weren't able to do so. And I think that, you know, it's just a fact that, you know, PAB disciplines in a way that's governed by our discipline matrix. We believe in progressive discipline. We believe in holding officers accountable and retraining them in trying to give people, you know, multiple chances and taking into account what they might have done in the past when assessing a newer violation. Transparency is required to be able to do that. But right now, the police discipline process governed by the CBA is just incompatible with discipline in a lot of cases. And a couple months ago, we came out with a report on RPD discipline where we found essentially that it's just not really happening very much. PSS is not sustaining complaints against RPD officers. The chief is handling most discipline through a private process known as command discipline, where he basically enters into a private settlement with the officer and the record is expunged after a year. And even officers who may, be truly eligible for discipline underneath the rules, the arbitrator can overturn it. So
they get their record expunged after a year?
If it's handled by command discipline, yes.
Kind of like a clean slate act for police.
And for command discipline, I would say, too, is for relatively lower level of incidents.
But if you read our report from a couple months ago, you'll see that in the new CBA, they expanded it by almost double. So, Gino, you're correct that it's lower level incidents, but they raised it up a level. So there's actually a far larger group of offenses that are now eligible for command discipline.
What did that discipline page up to now, like 8 pages? In the original CBA, it was like half a page. Now it just grows every single collective bargaining session.
Don from Rush called in, but couldn't get your call. Sorry, Don. I mean, if you want to call back, we can try to squeeze it before the end of the hour. Before we do that, though, let me just ask our guests from the PAB. Again, the goal here is to bring as many parties as possible here. The Locust Club, the Rochester Police Union declined our invitation today. Hope to have them in the future. City Hall sent a statement through the city attorney. That's certainly their discretion. Hope to talk to the mayor and members of council in the future, and I think we will. But I'm curious to know where you think this goes next. I don't know if you feel like Dr. Meyer-Small, there's unanswered questions. Will you release future reports now that these 31 are out there? Do you intend to release more? If so, when? What happens next year?
So the board, on a monthly basis, reviews whatever reports have been completed, and we anticipate publishing those reports. I think we're going to do it at the end of the month is what we said. And again, this is just, I think the issue is that it's just so new for us.
You're saying just get used to it. It's going to be normal.
Right. It's, you know, we're going to be meeting with individuals from all over the country soon in at a conference. And this is not atypical for this type of reaction to happen. And then it just normalizes.
So we could see on a monthly basis reports released going forward every month, what? A dozen reports, five reports, 20 reports?
So probably closer to five.
Get closer to that microphone.
Probably closer to five. It's the reason so many were released at once is we had a backlog, but just because of all the process that goes into it, we can usually close about four or five a month.
And it is your opinion that there's nothing that you've heard from the city's law department that tells you you should stop? Obviously. No plans to change.
No plans to change.
And we asked for next steps. The next steps, which we've been doing monthly, is we'll be meeting with council, we'll be meeting with administration, meeting to work and continue to work through these issues in work sessions. So it's a continuing dialogue.
Okay.
I think it's important to really share here, Evan, though, this is, again, this is not an anti-law enforcement perspective. This is not a got you. This is not trying to embarrass, thwart any of that. This is to ensure that what has been outlined in our charter and the tenets are accountability and transparency. We can't say that enough. It's important to have a collaborative and cooperative relationship with the chief, with RPD, with the Locust Club, with certainly general counsel, and that's our endeavor. We're not trying to not make that mm-hmm. happen, but we feel that that basically individuals are asking us not to do our job.
So last 15 seconds or so, have you talked to the mayor about this?
No.
Do you intend to?
I do.
Okay. Gino, anything you want to add as we close here? What you're working on next with this?
I mean, I'm keeping an eye on everything, and just really my stance is I'm on the side of transparency and accountability. And I want to see the reports. I wish the department was more forthcoming with their internal information. I wish the Locust Club did not challenge every step of the way, but here we are. And we should all be on the side of transparency in government.
Well, in the future, we'll welcome the Locust Club and perhaps the city attorney and others, city council. But for now, let me thank you. Thank you, Gina Finelli, for help this hour.
Yeah, thank you.
Great work. Investigation City Hall reporter for WXXI News. Often takes this mic, does often a better job than I do. Leslie Meyer-Small, Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Deputy Executive Director Ben Whitworth, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Chair of the Board is Larry Knox. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
We'll be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.